Good evening. Happy Wednesday. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Polysports here on Global Patriot Radio. We can be found at blogtalkradio.com sometimes. I say sometimes because last week, like several other weeks already this year, I couldn't get in. They barred me. I'm out. No, I'm just kidding. They didn't really bar me, but I could not get logged on or something was wrong. And so we couldn't get in. It's happened to Vito and Al a few times. We're just kind of wondering what the heck we got to do next. But in the meantime, I am here. It is now, as they say. So here I am. So it is Wednesday, April the 10th, 2024. And you can find us here Mondays, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, with the Vito Esposito Show featuring Vito and Big Al, Mama Mia, No Sharia. Wednesdays, me, Hank Jones, Hank Jones Polysports Collide. At Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern. And then Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eustern to midnight, Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christie revealing the truth about Islam. And that's what's going on here right now. We got some folks already listening in. So there's several ways you can listen in, of course. You can just go to the website, click on the link. But if you click on the link I give you, if you follow the show, that takes you right in. I don't think you have to actually log in. Or you can log in, get an account, free account, log in like Boyd the Alaskan has done, and listen in the chat room. Where at some point he's going to call me Grandpa, I'm sure. But, hey, I'm proud of it. And the third way, of course, call in. 319-527-6706. That's 319-527-6706. And you can listen in that away. You can also email me anytime, hjpsports@gmail.com. Hit me up on Facebook. Just type in Hank Jones Polysports. That's one word, Polisports. And that'll pop up. Or you can go to Twitter, at hpolysports. That's what Sue from New Mexico and Boyd the Alaskan do. Sue is a good follow over there, at loveamerica615. Give her a follow. She finds the stuff to put out and spreads the word. And that's very, very important these days. Brother Tommy's also listening in. Big sister's out of town. She's on a cruise. So she's living the life. I'm hanging out in the official Hank Jones Polysports Space Force Observation Outpost, the Mini Aussie, Fed. The wife working over at Acoustic Hank Land. And as I say every week, Barack Obama orchestrated or covered up the circumstances of the death of Dafari Campbell. Change my mind. Today's first internet laughy from the Babylon Bee. Unhinged Trump threatens more violence by planning to trigger landslide on Election Day. This next one's good, and it's very apropos. Caitlin Clark canonized as saint for making women's basketball watchable. Actually, Brother Tommy would tell you that she's not only made it watchable, that she's literally, and he's right, she's literally the Magic Johnson of the men's game. This complete all-around game, has the court awareness, has skill set that no one else really has, a complete skill set. Last couple of weeks, losses that I deem significant. Thursday the 28th of March, we lost former NBAer Walt Wesley to leukemia at age 78. He played college ball at Kansas with JoJo White, and he had somewhat of a journeyman career as a pro. The 29th, we lost actor Chance Perdomo in a motorcycle act, 27. He received several nominations from British TV, featured in two streaming series, one on Netflix and the other on Amazon Prime. The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina and Gen V, respectively. We also lost British drummer Jerry Conway to motor neuron disease at age 76. He played with Jethro Tull, Fairport Conventions, and Cat Stevens, among others. Cat Stevens now goes by the name, of course, of Yusuf Islam, for whatever reason. Finally, the 29th, we lost actor Lou Gossett Jr. at age 87. No cause was actually listed. From his role as Fiddler in Roots to the conniving Marcus Hayes on The Rockford Files. He was popular on the small screen in the 70s, but he blew up on the big screen in 1982 with his Oscar-winning Best Supporting Actor performance as the gruff, tough, but ultimately caring Sergeant Foley. the boot camp drill instructor in An Officer and a Gentleman. He was the first black actor to win in that category. He had also previously won an Emmy for his performance on Roots, bombs like Jaws 3D and Iron Eagle, but those are forgiven, both for his extensive body of work as well as the quality of his work. Even in his cringe movies, he was good. His turn as Henri Cloche, not to mention his character's ultimate fate in the movie The Deep, is legendary. Jacqueline Bisset's performance in that movie didn't hurt either. One of his best and little-known roles came in an HBO movie I watched in college. It was called The Guardian. He plays a building security consultant. And although in the 1980s era version of Wokesters, he would be considered too mean, he ultimately proves out to be absolutely spot on with his assessment that you cannot compromise on crime and safety. I would be remiss to mention another underappreciated role in an underappreciated movie. He played Jerry in the movie Enemy Mine. Great flick with him and Dennis Quaid. It starts out kind of like, gets really good though. On Easter Sunday, the 31st of March, we lost actresses Barbara Rush at age 97 and Barbara Baldovin at age 85. You know Barbara Baldovin had to be hot. Why? Because she wore one of the red uniforms during her time on the original Star Trek TV series. That is 100% fact. If a woman on that show wore a red uniform, because she was hot. I'm sorry. I'm just stating facts. Monday, the 1st of April, April Fool's Day, was not kind to us. We lost former NFLer Vontae Davis, unknown causes, age 35. He made waves and headlines when he abruptly retired at halftime of a game while he was playing for the Buffalo Bills in just the second game of the 2018 season. His first interception as a pro went for a pick six in his fourth career game. Later in his career, in his first appearance with his new team, the Buffalo Bills, he removed himself from the game at halftime, saying he was done. He confirmed his retirement post-game, and although some teammates, along with the rather vulturistic media, slammed him for it, he stayed true to his word and himself. He said he was no longer the player that he was early in his career, and football was not where he belonged anymore. He later opened a holistic wellness spa. He ran that until his passing. We also lost a comedic icon, SCTV alum Joe Flaherty, at age 82 after a short illness. If the only thing he ever did was his SCTV character of Count Floyd, he would have just been a comedic genius. That he also added roles and impersonations such as Kirk Douglas, Charlton Heston, Hugh Beaumont, William F. Buckley, and Garfunkel. Add in the corpse of Albert Schweitzer, Prince Philip, and then his turn as the bass player for SCTV's K-Tel spoof using the mythical band The Ramblers. That shows his utter brilliance. Now, add in Sammy Maudlin, ex-con Rocco, sax-playing private investigator Vic Arpeggio. That blasts him right past gold, straight to platinum. We haven't even gotten to the brilliance that was straight man Floyd Robertson opposite Earl Camembert on SCTV News, or his turn as owner and president Guy Caballero. The Guy Caballero portrayal of SCTV's adaptation of The Godfather is beyond brilliant. It was called The Godfather, starring Floyd the Barber. I can hear it clearly now. Eugene Levy is Floyd the Barber. He's begging God Caballero avenge the thugs that broke his barber pole and corrupted Opie along the way. Floyd, and he actually says, Floyd, someday that day may come. I'll call on you for a haircut, or perhaps a trim. Just here, perhaps a trim. Here's the hell of it, though. Despite his longtime work at SCTV and his brilliant portrayals that embodied Canada, such as Slade Cantrell in the beyond brilliant Six Gun Justice, he wasn't even Canadian. He was born in Pittsburgh. Comedy icon Joe Flaherty, We've lost others in the past. Of course, the great John Candy, Tony Rosato, Harold Ramis. And then we lost John Barth the next day. He died in hospice care at age 93. He was a longtime writer. He served on the faculty of Penn State during the time that Rambo creator David Morrell was doing his master's there. Barth won two National Book Awards and was noted for his witty approach to controversial subjects at the time of his writings. Thursday, the 4th of April, we lost former Major League pitcher Pat Zachary at age 71 following a lengthy illness. He won a World Series with the Cincinnati Reds in 1976. And then pitching against his former team on July 24th, 1977, he gave up a hit to Pete Rose in the eighth inning, which kept alive Pete Rose's hitting streak, tied him at the time for the longest National League batting streak, went on to 44 consecutive games. After being pulled from the game, Pat Zachary went over to kick a batting helmet. He missed, and then he kicked the dugout steps instead, and that caused him to miss the remainder of that season. Now, last Friday the 5th, we lost former Firehouse frontman C.J. Snare to colon cancer at age 64. As a songwriter, he wrote seven top 100 Billboard top 100 songs. Saturday the 6th, we lost actor Cole Briggs Plenty at age 27, no known cause as yet. He appeared on the hit series Yellowstone as well as one of its spinoffs, 1923. Last Sunday, we lost singer Clarence Frogman Henry at age 87. Despite his advanced age, Clarence Frogman Henry, a New Orleans native, he was scheduled to perform at the New Orleans Jazz or Heritage and Jazz Festival later this month. His most famous song, Ain't Got a Home, received a major boost, including significantly increased royalties when Rush Limbaugh used it for his show's Homeless update. He went on to perform at couple of Rush Limbaugh shows and speaking gigs, including on a Caribbean cruise. You know the song, Ain't Gonna Leave. It's used in the movie Diner, or you say if you know that. We also lost former Major League Baseballer Jerry Grody to respiratory failure at age 81. He was a catcher. He was on that famous 1969 New York Mets team that shocked the world when they won the World Series. Again, as I've said before, please continue prayers for Felicia Goodson, former guest on the show, mother of former Hawkeye running back Tyler Goodson, going through cancer treatment. Hopefully all is better and she has completed it. Don't forget my friends at Alliance Communications, Central Florida's 24-hour premier call center and messaging and answering service for your medical clinic, hospital clinic, service company. They also work with remote staff. If you're interested in that, give them a call, 800-555-3738, or, of course, look them up on the Internet at alliancecommunications.com. Another Internet laughy from the Babylon Bee. This is a group, number nine other groups that desperately need their own day of visibility. Remember the Transgender Day of Visibility on Easter Sunday. CrossFitters. Not enough people are aware that these workout warriors exist and are flipping enormous truck tires and flailing thick ropes around to get into better shape than you'll ever be in. Number two, atheist vegans who own air fryers. This is a perpetually underrepresented segment of society. Number three, traditional wives who make sourdough. If only these hardworking women could let everyone around them know that they make bread. Number four, Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift. Number five, vapors. You'd never know it, but they're sitting near you at baseball games, blowing enormous clouds of smoke. Number six, people doing carnivore. Far too few are aware of these revolutionary people. Number seven, Meghan Markle, now living in relative obscurity as a member of the British royal family who's being upstaged by the misfortunes of her in-laws. Number eight, overweight underwear models. If there's any group of people who must be seen and have their pictures plastered onto billboards and buses, it's these large examples of human beauty. And number nine, liberal celebrities. Did you even know that there are liberal celebrities? may let you know who you should vote for, too. So let's get to it. Now, maybe Hunter Biden isn't really above the law after all. Patriot Journal, he demands an end to his trial. And a federal judge announced a rather surprising decision. I remember DOJ offered him a sweetheart deal last year. Federal judge threw it out. Lately, his lawyers tried to get his tax evasion case thrown out. They claimed he was being targeted over political motivation. Oh, my God. Anyway, a judge said three felony charges, six misdemeanor charges are going to go forward. And the judge rejected the motion, basically said this has merit. So good thing. Let's hope. Let's hope it goes forward further. Number B today, don't let anyone tell you that the Taliban isn't committed or that most of them shouldn't be committed. So, yeah, from Patriot Journal, okay, we all know about the Afghanistan pullout, blah, blah, blah. Poverty is back on the rise over there. It's only getting worse, of course, because they just released a statement of what they'll do to women who commit certain crimes. They boasted of it. They will return to stoning women to death in public. Mullah Hibatullah Akhundzada said, "You say it's a violation of women's rights when we stone them to death, but we will soon implement the punishment for adultery. We both say we defend human rights. We do it as God's representative and you as the devil's." A UN report from last year found 37 people have already been sentenced to stoning. More than 100 have received sentences for crimes against God. Yeah, they're going back to stoning. Way to go, Dopey Joe. Here's one that has me asking some questions. This is from American Update. Red state lawmakers passed bill banning Chinese land purchases near military sites after DCNF investigation. That was the Daily Caller News Foundation. Kansas House of Representatives passed a bill preventing foreign adversaries from buying up land near sensitive military sites. 84-39 prevents firms and entities linked to China and other countries identified as foreign adversaries from purchasing agricultural land within 150 miles of a military installation. Daily Caller News Foundation discovered the parent company of a firm that planned to buy land in Kansas is extensively tied to the Chinese Communist Party, a.k.a. Red China. It's the greatest national security threat facing Kansas. President Xi will stop at nothing, Republican Jake LaTurner told Daily Caller News Foundation. As I applaud the Kansas House for taking bold action this morning to help ensure our state's most critical infrastructure is protected. Hold on just a second, folks. And I am sorry, too, for that little interruption. That was my paddle group calling to say that tours tomorrow are canceled due to weather where we would be paddling. That sucks. I'm not going to be paddling tomorrow. But, hey. Meanwhile, so I have a couple questions about this. How was this allowed to happen in the first place? Seriously, how did we not have a law in place already stopping countries like Red China from buying up land, huge swaths of agricultural land? They bought up companies over here, such as Smithfield and others, But we're letting them buy land just anywhere near military sites? I mean, why did we need such a law? Or why have we not had one? But here's my real question. How in hell are there 39 legislators in any U.S. state that would vote against us, this thing? There's 39 people, 39 legislators in the state of Kansas that voted against this. And don't tell me, wow, it didn't go far enough, or it went to... How is this even allowed? And there's a follow-up to that, not to that particular thing, but from American Action News, Chinese Red China, a battery maker, is trying to evict a Michigan man from his land. Goshen Inc., it's a subsidiary of Goshen High Tech, slated to build a $2.4 billion manufacturing plant in Big Rapids, Michigan. Steven Fenstermacher sold land to them under an agreement between the two parties that he can currently reside on the property. They're now looking to terminate it because he violated terms of the agreement. So here's my question. Why are Americans selling their land to companies from Red China? Any of these stupid people not heard of maybe vetting the buyer, finding out what's going on, maybe even trying to get a higher bid? And do some people not realize their monetary greed doesn't really supersede our need for national security? Here's a little clue. There is no such thing as a company from Red China that's not acting against the best interests of the United States of America. So I'm going to take a call from my buddy Rick. He's called in a couple weeks ago, and he's got a special message. This is about loss. I'll let him tell more of the story, but basically there's a couple things going on, and I'm going to share it on my Facebook page after the show. And I'll share it on Twitter if I can as well. So let me get him on now. Rick, how you doing?
Hey, good to hear from you, Hank.
Yeah, I'm sorry about your loss, but if you would go ahead and just fill us in a little bit. I don't want to steal your thunder. I want you to be able to tell the story.
Well, unfortunately, we received some pretty awful news this past Monday. Back in 1988, when I graduated from college, I started my career in coaching back at my old high school. And in 89, 90, I was the head coach of the sophomore football team. And I had a young man by the name of David Vasquez, who was a freshman and then a sophomore the second year, who played running back for me. And just a great kid, quiet, hardworking, just had a fire within him that was incomparable to any other sophomore that I've coached or over the years. So anyway, it had been a few years since we had been in touch, and a couple of months ago I reached out and said, hey, let's get together and reminisce a little bit. I got some old game tapes we can look at. And he's got back to me and said, yeah, we'll do that real soon. I'll get back to you. Well, you know, a week or so went by and I hadn't heard from him, so I retexted him. I'm back. And he told me he wasn't feeling too good, that we'd have to get together, you know, again another time. Well, a few days later, come to find out that he was in the hospital, and after talking with his wife, I found out that he had been diagnosed with stage 4 esophageal and liver cancer, along with having blood clots in his legs, in his lungs, and he had actually had 2 strokes and had a brain bleed. And so we started a GoFundMe to help with the bills while he was, you know, going through this. And it's been a very shy response at this point. But the bills obviously are mounting up. And unfortunately, on Monday, after going through a fairly routine procedure, he went into cardiac arrest and passed away. So now we're looking at a situation where I just found out the funeral is going to be about $12,000 with, you know, all the costs associated
sure.
with that. So we're really looking for, you know, the good people out there that really hate cancer. And I know you've got a sports-based following. And for those people that are understand the relationship between a coach and a player, just out there, you know, you can go to your Facebook or your Twitter. And if you feel inclined, you know, that'd be great. And I figured I put it on my Facebook page, and I've got 900 some followers. And if each one of those people just sent, you know, $5, that would help out the family a whole heck of a lot. So,
sure.
You know, we're just praying for the family to help them make through this tough time. And it's a tough time for me because this is not the way it's supposed to go. You know, guys
right.
my age are not supposed to be burying the players. The players are supposed to be burying me. And so it's been a rough time.
Yeah, sure. You and I talked a little bit about this. There's really no warning in this case. You know, there was just nothing. And, you know, he's left with his wife is left with this burden, which is, you know, terrible, but also no real explanation. I mean, you always say, well, you know, if you believe and all that, and I, you know, I'm a believer. And I believe, you know, that people go to heaven. And, you know, I don't want to go into the hell thing, but I do believe in a hell, but it doesn't mean I believe everybody goes or anything like that. But my point being, you know, I believe in heaven. I believe it exists. And I believe that people who are, you know, who profess their love for Jesus go to heaven. And that's, you know, it is supposed to comfort us. And hopefully it does. But at the same time, his wife is left with this terrible loss with no real warning. You know, we say, well, you know, there's never a good time or all that. But that doesn't change the fact that his wife has this incredible sense of loss. And we can, you know, go into all the – but just no warning, you know. And that's terrible in and of itself.
Yeah,
but so,
it was a very tough situation because – realistically, David was very self-aware. You know, I spent the last 4 or 5 days just in his hospital with him, you know, 4 or 5 hours at a time. And I believe it was about the second day that I was there. I said to him, I said, you know, are you Catholic? I had a memory. I thought he was. And he said, yeah. And I said, well, you know, I said, if you need to talk to somebody and you don't want to, you know, stress out your wife, you know, they have services here. They have priests here that could just come and talk and just, you know, if you want to talk about your fears or your anger or your frustration or whatever, they'll just sit and listen. And then his wife had to go home to take care of, let the dogs out or whatever. And as soon as she walked out the door, he just opened up and he talked for better part of an hour and a half, just kind of unloading and I just sat and listened. And but he was very self-aware. He understood that, you know, that this was not a good situation, that he probably wasn't going to recover from it. And his perspective was that God has a plan, and God's putting a challenge in front of him, and he's going to do everything he can to beat this challenge. And if he takes David, then he takes David. If he cures David or helps cure David, then great. But he was very aware going into, you know, the final few days that this was not a curable situation. There was not going to be any saving, and he needed to kind of get himself right mentally and spiritually and emotionally. And you know, one of the most profound things I think he told me, and I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said, you know, there's all kinds of issues, and everybody has arguments, and everybody has these, you know, problems with marriage or relationships or with siblings or whatever. And he said, all of that doesn't matter. He said, I've been given an opportunity to make things right and forgive and you know, repair. And he did over the last 4 days, he really did.
Oh, that's great. I mean, it really is. It's, I don't get on this show to preach, and you and I talked about that a little bit. This is not a preaching show for me, but I would always urge anyone, discover your faith. I think too often we go through life, and it includes me, we go through life taking so many things for granted. And we forget, that we have a purpose. We may not know what that purpose is. A lot of people that never find their purpose, but we have one. I mean, it would be foolish for any of us to think, well, we're just here. We just happened to land here. There was just this big bang, and that's what happened. I feel sorry for people that go through life feeling that. There's got to be a feeling of desolation at a certain point. So, it's good that he was able to experience that. But you're left with this profound sense of sadness, though. But in the meantime, there's another issue, and that is, his wife is left not just dealing with loss, but dealing with debt, and dealing with expenses that come with this. Last I checked, they don't do this for free at the hospitals, and they may feel for him, and but he's going to have this financial burden, or his wife is going to. So that's why, I wanted you to come on today and talk about this. And I'll give the link in the chat room, but it's in the meantime, I'm going to do it on my Facebook page. I'm also going to put it on my Twitter page. So folks, any of you that are listening that are going to say, Hank, I'm doing this because I want to, not because I feel, more special or more deserving than anyone else. I'm doing this because this is the kind of thing that's important. It's why we stick together in life. It's why we cultivate friendships and relationships, and is to be there for each other. And hopefully this will help his family to deal with this. Now you said a few other things, about him. Quote unquote, getting right. He had no warning of this. There was no kind of, other than he was just not feeling well, there was no advance warning of this in any way, correct?
Obviously there had to be some kind of warning. There was some indications probably with over the years. But I just don't think that he probably thought much of it, like much of us, many of us do. Hell, healthcare is so goddamn, is so expensive these days that, I spent 6 days with just extreme abdominal pain back in 2010, only to find out on a Saturday while I was driving home from my son's 7-on-7 summer scrimmage that my colon had split open and was spilling out into my body cavity. And I ended up in emergency surgery in the hospital for, 4 weeks. And then just the whole thing. But I just was so hard-headed because I didn't want to go to the emergency room and have them tell me, you got indigestion, and then charge me, $5,000 for nothing. So, I'm not getting into the political thing here. I'm just not going to, right now is not
right.
That time,
sure.
but something has to be done about that. It's just ridiculous. But, the next thing I want to mention before I forget it, because I am getting older, is I got some timers these days. Sometimes I remember, sometimes I don't, I had been planning since we found out that we were going to do a fundraiser golf outing, first weekend in August, for the family to help them kind of make it through the bills until things kind of settled down. And obviously with David passing now, it's going to become a fundraiser / memorial golf outing. It'll be out here in Sycamore, Illinois.
Okay.
I don't have all the details yet because I'm just in the middle of kind of putting things together. But I'll get you that information too.
Okay. I appreciate
anyone that,
that
wants to help sponsor a hole or, you know, even just whatever. But
sure.
I know that there are a lot of people from our hometown that knew David that probably listened to you, and maybe they haven't really gotten all the information that they need or would want to help but don't really know how. So
sure. Well, no, absolutely. And I think, you know, you're right. There, you know, he has friends, I'm sure, that would want to know that are going to be shocked to hear this, first of all, and will want to help in any way that they can. So, you know, and like I said, I'll get that on the Facebook and I'll get that on the Twitter, you know, right away too. So,
yeah, one of the hardest things that I had to do this week was I'm in contact with several of the players from that same class. And I had to reach out in a group Facebook Messenger message and let them know what was going on. I've been keeping them up to date on things, and hopefully they're sharing with their other teammates. But, you know, the outpouring from his own teammates has just been shock and misery and pain. And I know that many of them are maybe not still in hometown, but they all have been sending their messages. And David was, like I said, he was a running back for me. And back in the day when your brother and I were seniors in high school, we had a pretty decent football team. And
I remember.
We had a young man by the name of Brad Bender who was our running back.
Yep.
And I come to find out in my conversations with David that when David was in, I believe he was in third grade at that time, he lived near Brad, and he would follow Brad around, and they were buddies and whatever. And Brad kind of, you know, he was a little kid, so he just kind of, you know, let him chum along or whatever. So
sure.
I reached out to Brad, and Brad sent him a real nice text message, which I read to him, and David was just surprised, you know, and just elated that Brad was reaching out. But not only that, but David also had another hero from Geneva High School football, which was Derek Swanson. And I know you know that name.
Yep.
Derek was maybe one of the best running backs Geneva has ever had. And he was number 33. And David picked his number based upon that.
Oh,
and,
really?
Of course, wow. I reached out to Derek. Derek and I played in college together. And he and I are still very close friends. And Derek sent him a real nice text, really nice. And unfortunately, I got the text the morning that David passed away, so I was never able to tell David when he was alive, but I read it to him while we were in the room after he had passed. And that was tough for me, but, you know, I think it's important, and I'm going to go a little bit on my coaching soapbox here. You know, anybody that's involved in athletics or any, you know, if you got any kids that are in athletics, you know, you need to express to them the importance of understanding that you are somebody's idol. And when you're given that title of idol or mentor, you have to take it seriously because these little kids look up to you, and it's important that you acknowledge it and that you do the right thing.
Yes.
I think it's just so important.
And you guys, correct me if I'm wrong, at one point you were the number one ranked team in the state, correct?
That's correct, yeah. We eventually, the last 2 weeks of the playoffs, we were the number one team in the state. And actually, the 1982 season was the first year that the USA Today did the national rankings. And we actually broke into the top five nationally at the 3A level. So,
oh, really? I did not realize that.
Yeah.
I was getting the hometown paper. I was getting the Geneva Republican delivered to, you know, and so I was reading that, but I do remember looking one day in USA Today and seeing, you know, how they would sort of tell you what's going on across the country in various states. And I remember reading, you know, that seeing somewhere that, you know, that, you know, one of the games that Geneva had won and they talked about, you know, the number one team, and then of course, unfortunately, it didn't end up that way. But still, it's a pretty great season. you know. And
yeah, it was a tough situation. You know, the first round of the playoffs, we beat the team 42-0. The second round, we beat them 49-0. And then we ran into the number two ranked team, a Catholic school, and don't get me started on that. Ran into a Catholic school, and we unfortunately we lost in overtime to a team on a rain-soaked, muddy field that if we played them another 100 times, we'd beat them 100 times by 2 touchdowns or more. I mean,
yeah.
And I'm not just saying that because I played on that team. I have talked to many guys from that team and from Bishop McNamara, and they have all said that they couldn't believe that they had actually won because we were, you know, such a more talented and so much bigger team than they were. But it's just like, you know, anything else in sports, you play the games because on any given day you never know.
Yeah. So did that use the was it the college style overtime? I mean, it was, although I think you started from the 10-yard line and not the 25, yeah. But it was that style of overtime where you basically start
4 downs from the 10.
Yeah.
From the 10. And then the other team got the ball. So the concept was go on defense first. And then that came down to who won the flip of the coin. And McNamara won the flip and chose defense. And according to the referees, we didn't get in, and they did. So there you go.
Oh, was there a discussion about that? Was that a controversial thing? Like, did you guys think you had scored or?
Well, this is going to be – Bob, I really don't want to get all onto this too much because really the purpose is here at David.
Yeah,
but I will
no,
tell
I
you this. Played center, and we had 4 downs from the 10-yard line. The first play, we ended up at the down to the 3. Second play, we threw a quick slant and ended up at the 1-inch line. We ran a quarterback sneak. Supposedly didn't get in, which I can't understand. I played center, and I was 2 yards into the end zone. I can't understand how our 220-pound quarterback didn't get in. And then on the last play, we ran a belly play off the tackle, and he didn't get in at that point. But it was just horse crap. It is really
too bad.
You know, it's a long time ago. So
yeah. But still, that's still an exciting thing, and so, it just showed, you know, the camaraderie that you know, players and coaches and, you know, stay in touch long after the game they're done playing. You know, whether you finish at, you know, after your high school years or your college years or even into the pros, you know, they stay in contact. You know, players and coaches stay in contact. I see it all. You know, I'm an Iowa Hawkeye fan, but I read and see about how these guys do that, and it's. You know, it's not a shock, in a sense, to hear that, you know, the players have been, you know, following and trying to stay in touch with David. So, you know, unfortunately, it ended the way it did. And, yes, we are all going to die, folks. But it doesn't mean we want it happening now. And it doesn't mean we want it, you know, to happen in this way. So, you know, that's why, you know, that's why I wanted you to come on and tell the story, because it's – one is to help out the family, but two, it's because, you know, it's I don't want to make it a cautionary tale, but, you know, our time here is finite, and, you know, don't take things for granted. Don't take your, how many of us have not reached out to a friend, you know, years later and then find out, you know, some terrible news. So, you know, I don't want people to go through that. I don't want people to go through that. So.
Yeah, this is unfortunately the third player of mine from that class that we've had to say goodbye to. And one of them happened actually beginning of sophomore year, right during summer workouts. The young man, after practice, they went over to the Batavia Quarry. You know where that's at.
Yeah.
And the young man drowned. So we had to say goodbye to him. And then one of my offensive tackles had passed away from alcohol-related disease, and, you know, so it's a tough situation. But like you said, everybody's got to go. It's just I just don't like having to bury my players, that's for sure.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. So, well, Rick, I do have to finish up, but I just, you know, thank you for coming on and you know, sharing with us. And folks, I'm going to put this in the, Rick sent me a link. I'm going to put it in the chat room, but also I'm going to put it on my Facebook page and I'll put it on my Twitter. So in the meantime, and again, be praying for David's family and friends. This is a tough thing to go through, but it's also, as I said, a cautionary thing. We should never take these things for granted. We should never take our family for granted, our friends, our loved ones, any of our loved ones. So Rick, thank you for coming.
No problem.
Thank you so much for coming.
Say hi to your brother for me.
Will do. We'll talk to you later. Thanks, Rick.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. So that's it's a sad thing to go through loss like that. And as he said, it's terrible to be there for the funerals of your, you know, of your former players and students. You know, my wife was a youth leader for a while. We were going to weddings and then, you know, having kids that were, you know, having kids. But unfortunately at this point, we've not directly lost anyone, but you know, we've heard about friends and we've heard about, you know, other people that, you know, so yeah, it's just a sad tale. And I know it's upset Rick a lot, and he's coping with it, but it's never an easy thing to deal with. So please check out my Twitter page and check out my Facebook page. If you feel motivated to give. Meantime, I see another caller and I've got to take this one and I've got to introduce it properly. And when I play this, you'll know who it is. I hope you do. You should know. If I can find it, if Vito put it, here it is.
This is TJ, dedicating the song to Lick Betty.
Whoa, Black Betty, bam a lamb. Whoa, Black Betty, bam a lamb. She's from Birmingham, bam a lamb. Way down in Alabama, bam a lamb. The way she shake that thing. Shake.
That is, of course, Tom Jones. So we're bringing on Tommy. Brother Tommy,
you there?
I'm in there.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I just had to introduce you with the Tom Jones song.
I'm going to go from Maudlin to Mary in just a minute, but I want everyone to know that this is not a coordinated effort. I did not know that you were going to be talking to Rick like this, and you can vouch that it was not a coordinated effort.
Absolutely.
I will tell you guys, anyone that's listening that can give a few dollars, Rick is a stand-up guy, and I joke around a lot, but I'm also serious when serious needs to be done, and he's a stand-up guy. So that story was obviously heartbreaking, and so be it. We move on, and now I'm going from Maudlin to Mary. I was born in 1965, and anyone circa 1965 knows what Hank was referring to earlier on the Deep. It's a coming-to-age thing for guys, the Deep with Jacqueline Bisset. And you know exactly what I'm talking about, males. When you turned about 16 when you saw that, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But no, I didn't have anything to say. I was touched by Rick's story, so I didn't have anything. I just pushed number one because in case you are inquisitive, I'm at a creative low after that story. Jesus Christ, that's sad.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, like I said, you know, burying your own players, burying your, you know, it's a tale that we've heard before, but it's a sad tale. And it's just terrible when it happens like this. And so hopefully,
devastating.
But again, it's part of where it comes from is, you know, a family is left, you know, with bills. And it's not something they expect. You don't. Yeah, no parent should
money
have to deal
aside,
with
it. No parent should outlive their children. Money aside, money will take care of itself sooner or later.
Yeah.
That doesn't worry me. But no parent should have to deal with the horror of that's a different story. All right. Like I said, we're gonna go from Maudlin to Mary. What else is good? I didn't know Ramis died. You said Harold Ramis died
like in 2014.
No shit. Jeez, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I thought we discussed it. You know, I'm sure.
We
probably
did. It's an indictment on my memory. Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, but yeah, Harold Ramis and John Candy, of course, and now
of
Joe
course,
Flaherty. Joe Flaherty. Yeah. Joe Flaherty was the, you know, the godfather with Floyd the Barber. He's like, when he says, calling you for a haircut or perhaps a trim. The way he says trim just absolutely slays me when he does that. So that's why I just...
You know, I got a question for you. From an artistic standpoint, not from what was more popular, from an artistic standpoint, Saturday Night Live or Second City TV?
Oh,
from
SCTV.
An artistic standpoint.
SCTV, and it's not even
That's
close.
What I think, too. I agree. I couldn't agree more. I know they didn't produce as many stars, superstars, but...
Well, other than John Candy, you know... being a superstar, Rick Moranis for a while, and people don't know. Rick Moranis left Hollywood not because of anything. His wife had died. He didn't want his kids to be alone and grow up with, you know.
To SNL, you got Belushi, you got Murphy, you got Aykroyd, you got, I mean, Chevy
That's
Chase.
True. True.
So,
well, they've had a lot more.
I agree. I think the authenticity of SNL was better. It wasn't as campy. I would agree, but a lot of people would probably say SNL. I think it's a fair, debatable question.
Oh, to me, it's not even debatable. But again, that's why they play the games. In this case, that's why they show the shows. So, but. Yeah, great.
One that you mentioned, I'm going to interject real quick. Louis Gossett Jr. as Sergeant Foley. Every class, there's always one joker that thinks he's smarter than me. And in this class, Mayo, it's you, isn't it?
Yeah,
Mayonnaise.
Brilliant scene. And of course, you know, he redeems himself at the end by becoming... You know, he obviously really cares and all that, which, you know, that wasn't the whole message of the scene or of his character, but, you know, he does redeem himself sort of at the end. So,
but I didn't think he had to redeem himself. He was a caricature of a military-like person that's like, I'm doing this for your good, not mine, gentlemen. I'm doing this for your good. And so he was a hard ass, but he needed to be a hard ass because he's like, all right, you guys are a little fluffy. I got to strengthen you up if you really want to be a naval aviator.
I didn't realize, you know, you don't think of him. It's hard to believe that Louis Gossett Jr. was 87. I mean, you know, and I know
I
would have
guessed
67.
I would have guessed 67. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause he didn't really seem to age in any way, but everybody does. I know.
Plus, kind of like what you were talking about with Rick and stuff, there are certain people that really mess you up when they die because you're like, that guy was larger than life. And Louis Gossett Jr. was a guy that was larger than life. And you and I know Tom, last name starts with a D. I'm like, he's larger than life. And when he died, I'm like, holy crap. And I think that's what kind of Rick was like, you know. This guy was larger than life, and he died. So, yeah, I mean, it hits us, and unfortunately, it's a body blow, unfortunately. Yeah. But we deal with our body blows. You go to the next case or whatever, you know.
Yep, exactly. I really Vito put a mayonnaise. He was great. He really was. He was great in that movie. So.
It was fantastic. You know, Bob, Hank, you and I – share a brother-in-law, obviously. Those of you who don't know, Hank and I are biological brothers, Dick. And Dick and I watched that movie live, and Dick walked out of it and looked at me and said, William Gossett Jr. is going to get Best Supporting Actor for this role. That's how powerful it was. It's like you just saw it at the get-go. He was so powerful in that. Jeez.
Yeah, he was. He was fantastic. He absolutely was. No doubt about it. No two ways about it, as they say. So. Anyway,
big hitter,
yeah, big gun, no two ways about it. So what else is going on in your neck of the woods? Anything special or?
Not a ton. Like I said, I didn't call with anything of substance. I just called to chime in. You know me. I like to listen to my voice.
We all do.
White's doing great. Yeah, we all do. White's doing good. Three boys are doing good. I still have not gotten feedback from New Mexico Sue as to where she is in New Mexico.
As I said, I don't. You know, that's up to her. If she wants to put that out there, that's fine. But she has not reached out, and I'm not gonna make her in any way. Why? You know.
Well, I am. The point is, I am.
Yeah, well.
The point is, I am.
Yeah,
come
at least
on,
it would
just
be,
tell me if it's Albuquerque.
No, it would be your
Sue,
son.
If you're listening, just tell me if it's Albuquerque.
Yeah. No. So
no.
Anyway.
Other than that, no good news. Boys are doing great. As you mentioned, our sister is in France as we speak. She was just in Cadiz, Spain. She texted as if I should have known where it was. I've never even heard of Cadiz, Spain, but evidently I'm supposed to have because it's one of the oldest cities in the world. But,
oh, man. Okay,
everything's,
yeah.
Otherwise, BAU, business as
cool.
usual.
Cool. Well, I'm going to run so that I can get back on this train of trying to cover some of the stuff that I didn't get to cover the last week because
totally
of this stupid. So in the meantime, have a good one. I will talk at you later.
Totally cool. You too. And thank you for playing my introductory song. You haven't done that for like the last three times, and I was getting a little disturbed.
I know. Well, you know, I had the time.
Talk
to you later.
You got it.
And this caller I know, and she's maybe going to answer Brother Tommy. This is Sue from New Mexico. Sue, how you doing?
Yeah. Hi, I'm fine. I just have to let Tommy know I'm a fourth generation New Mexican. I lived over 34 years in Santa Fe, but right now I'm actually not in New Mexico. I had to move because of the cartels and MS-16 moving in. It got to be a situation where it was too dangerous to actually stay there. So
I actually knew that you no longer actually lived in New Mexico. I just didn't want to say that out loud. That was up to you to say, if you know. I didn't want that was your turn.
That's okay. I think it's important. You know, fourth generation New Mexican, and I, you know, basically it was so dangerous that I literally lost everything and moved and got out of there, or I probably wouldn't be alive today. So
has it become that bad there? Or just just in that area?
Yes. No, well, in Santa Fe, and I was on the outskirts of Santa Fe, but all of New Mexico is like this. The sheriff's is in cahoots with the cartels. The cartels came in and they took over. And I was living in a trailer court, but the cartels, if you left them alone, they pretty much left you alone. But things happened, like a 18-year-old was shot in the head behind my trailer over a drug deal. You know, a lot of things like that was happening. But towards the last year that I was there, I think they're MS, are they 16 or 13?
MS-13, I think, is what it's. Yeah. MS-13.
Anyway, they moved in, and they wanted to take over our trailer court because it was very lucrative drug deals. And there became, we had almost daily shootouts, and all you could do, you know, with the trailer was you got on the floor and flat because bullets would come through the trailer. And the MS-13 were absolutely terrifying. One moved across the street from me and would sit out there with all their tattoos and everything and look at you like he would like to slit your throat. And I had someone break in. I had a baseball bat, thank God, you know, come at me with an 8-inch hunting knife and a lot of stuff. And it just got to where it was so dangerous that I left the equity in my trailer. I left everything and I got out of there.
Wow.
Or I really do believe I would be dead today. So for everybody who doesn't think you know, the border. And I would say what was going on there was worse than what you're seeing in New York City right now. And I know in people I'm still in contact with in Albuquerque is pretty bad. But the fact that California is a sanctuary city, it just became so much worse than even Albuquerque. But
really?
What is going on with the people who have come over, they're extremely dangerous, they're scary, there are so many murders and everything that are not reported and people do not know about. I know in Albuquerque and outside of New Mexico, they were finding mass graves. I mean, none of this is being reported. And now I'm starting to hear about the same things in Colorado. Right now,
which is where Hawkeye Mike is, by the way. Hawkeye Mike is in Colorado.
Oh, is he?
He is in Colorado, so.
Well, where I'm living at right now, most of the doctors have moved out of town. We got, I'm living in an independent senior facility, you know, care facility. But anyway, we got notice that the police, because they are so short-staffed, they have been chased the police out of here by, you know, this, it's a blue state, the Democrats, you know. And
yeah.
There was a notice that was put out that they would only respond to an active homicide, you know, that was actually taking place at that time. If anything else had happened to you, you'd have to wait 2 to 3 days for someone to get to you. My building has lockdown to where, you know, you can't get in or out. They've got security. They're just trying to protect us. Even to go across the street to the Walgreens is extremely dangerous.
God, I know it's bad in certain areas. I didn't know it was that bad in cities. I mean, places where people are every day. I mean, that's just.
Yeah. And this has happened within the last, about 2 years. I'll tell you, I'm in Pueblo. And so, you know, he knows where that is. And I'm hearing what's going on in Denver. It is absolutely frightening. Even Colorado Springs is starting to get some stuff. And that's where you have the Air Force Academy. You know, you've got a lot of that going on. But, I mean, it's spreading throughout Colorado like wildfire. But they started out, you know, with them coming down on the policemen and not supporting them. And, you know, that's how it always starts. And then letting all these criminals out over and over and over again, you know. And I've seen it happen in 2 states now. I'm not going to run anymore. But people better wake up. It's moving north and it's moving fast. And it's not only going to be in blue states, it's everywhere because there's too many that have come in. Anyway, I know you've got a lot to do on your show and everything, but
call, Sue, and it's I know it's getting bad. I just did not know it had gotten that bad in parts of New Mexico. That's just frightening.
New Mexico, for when my daughter was at New Mexico State, that was back in the 1980s, was getting bad. They
really?
Were finding all kinds of, mass graves and all kinds of stuff. New Mexico had been going downhill for a while. And, you know, people didn't realize that in New Mexico in the 1990s and even 2000, 2010, they were finding, and this is all around the El Paso region, but there were, on the New Mexico side of the border, there were beheadings occurring. the cartels would send out warnings to the border patrol and to the guard and everything. You know, they would slip a truck, and when you'd open it up, there would be messages to the border patrol. This is what's going to happen to you, and it would be dismembered bodies. You have no idea how really horrific, horrific things are, and the amount of dead people. And this has been from the 1980s, 1990s, it started finding so many dead people in, you know, the desert areas north of the border. And there were so many. The numbers aren't even reported. And now that we've got Biden, I can't even imagine the numbers of, you know, how many there are. And I'm sure it's not, I'm sure all, and this is really gross stuff and beheading, I'm sure it's still occurring. They would not have stopped it.
Yeah.
But these cartels are bad people, and now you have the MS-13. You want to know what's bad, the MS-13. And Argentina's crime is down now because they opened their prison, and where did they came? They came here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll
isn't that just wonderful? Isn't that just wonderful? But I mean, isn't it just wonderful that we're the recipient of all that? You know, I mean, it's just we get dumped on.
Yeah, and it's sad, that I couldn't live my life out in the state that I love. I still say I'm from New Mexico. I'll always be a New Mexican. I'll always love that state, but I was forced out of it, and I pray Trump gets in. But anyway, thank you, Hank, and you get on with your show.
And thank you.
I hope that answers Tommy.
Yeah. So, Brother Tommy, just so you know, Sue now lives in Pueblo, Colorado area. So just so he knows, so he doesn't try to, you know, strong arm you into a whatever. So. In the meantime, Sue, be well. God bless. Be safe.
Okay.
You know, it's weird. I mean, I don't see that much in Florida. I know it's here, but I guess mainly because I don't let it scare me to, you know, I don't let it recover. But I also don't live alone, and I also live in a, you know, reasonably decent area where,
you know. You also have a Republican governor. Governor DeSantis is good. He's supporting police. He's doing what he can. That makes a big difference. Colorado has a Democratic governor. Any state that has a Democratic governor right now is in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
And, you know,
like,
I don't even know that they're so stupid, these Democrats, with what's happening in this state right now. And, I mean, this is pretty recent. I still think they'll vote Democrats in again. Blows my mind. But anyway, I talked enough, and on with the show. Okay, bye.
Thanks. Thanks so much, Sue. Sue from New Mexico, a great caller, a great patriot. You know, too often we sort of give it up after a certain point. Now, that's not most people I know, but there are, you know, there are people that say, well, it's no longer my problem. You know, there's the knot in my backyard. That, you know, she still cares, you know, even in, you know, no longer active working, but she is still concerned with what's happening in her community. And too many people aren't. Too many people just don't give a crap. Just don't care. Don't, you know, leave it to someone else to take care of it. And, you know, they say, keep on doing what you've always done. You keep on getting what you always got. And unfortunately, that's the price we pay if we don't remain vigilant. Simple as that. If we don't remain vigilant, we've always got. Simple as that. Okay, let's move on. Newt Gingrich appeared on Mark Levin's show the other day. I was driving home from a paddle, which I don't have any paddles tomorrow, and it sucks, but whatever. So I was driving home, and they were talking about the Baltimore Bridge collapse. And Dopey Joe, if you remember, and is getting lost. The media's not talking about it now. But in the initial stages, Dopey Joe, they loaded him up with enough peptides and amphetamines and everything else that props up a basically incoherent person, make him coherent long enough. And one of the first things he says, the U.S. government, he goes, we will pay to replace the Francis Scott Key Bridge. He actually said that. I was hit by that megaton ship, killed at least 6 people, trapped a couple dozen more who are still on the ship. It sails under Singaporean registry. And to top it off, it's also experienced issues in the past. But Newt Gingrich put it quite simply, why is the U.S. government paying for something that was destroyed by a ship and a company that is presumably insured? Why are insurance companies paying for this? What he didn't ask or say, probably because he isn't as insightful or indignant as I am, by the way, is this. Dopey Joe and his puppeteers wanted him to say that. It's exactly what they wanted him to say for political expediency. Dopey Joe couldn't have come up with that on his own. If there's insurance money to be had, which there sure as hell better be, it'll most likely be extorted or simply seized by the La Dopey Nostra. But worse, they are literally, with that statement, attempting to buy votes throughout Baltimore and Maryland and really the whole Delmarva area, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia. When a ship under foreign registry breaks down, then hits and destroys a bridge, and it results in at least 6 deaths, our president, whoever it is, has zero business committing U.S. resources to rebuilding or replacing. Now, I get in the short term. You know, we want to be of assistance, blah, blah, blah. Okay, great, cool. We do. We want to be of assistance. But saying it's our government is going to pay for it? Really? If the insurance company or companies don't cover it, or worse, the carrier and ship weren't insured, and because maybe they weren't insurable, we should be seizing any and all assets of said company or country that we legitimately can. I don't mean just going in and nationalizing, but I'm saying if they're not insured for whatever reason, and we can't, for whatever reason, get access, then, yeah, we better be seizing assets, taking what's basically ours. What's basically, I mean, they destroyed something in our country. This isn't some international stupid thing where we're sending aid elsewhere where we shouldn't be anyway. But, I mean, we should be seizing the ship's cargo, especially since it has hazardous materials, some of which may have spilled into our damn waterway. People aren't making anything of this. Media's dropped it. But it should send out a red flag to anyone who is listening. The U.S. government, meaning us, meaning the U.S. taxpayer. See, that's the thing they never tell you, the thing they never talk about. The U.S. government, when they say the U.S. government will pay for it, that's us. That's us that are paying for it. We have no business shouldering that burden, that financial burden. Now, I get it, the logistics, we need to build the bridge back, blah, blah, blah. But to say America is going to pay for it, that is so wrong on so many levels. Here's an excellent piece from Jason Isaac from the Daily Caller News Foundation. It says, the free market and good environmental stewardship thrive together in harmony. So he says, innovative pollution control technologies in the U.S. have helped to cut air pollution by nearly 80% over the last 50 years. That's good. With pollution now virtually indistinguishable from natural levels. But to hear absurdities being pushed by the Save the Planet crowd, one might think they're from a different world. And the irony is they're causing more harm than good. This April, many New York City pizzeria owners may close their restaurants. New York City lawmakers think that they're going to save the planet with a new regulation mandating a 75% cut carbon emissions from wood-fired ovens. The prohibitive mitigation costs involved with compliance have most pizzeria owners hanging up their aprons for good, or many, I should say, hang up their aprons for good. In California, an ongoing whistleblower lawsuit alleges that Governor Gruesome Newsom's administration, without proper statutory authority, put the squeeze on the state's then top oil and gas regulator to stop issuing new well drilling permits and fired him when he objected. A contentious drilling ban had been placed in abeyance pending the outcome of a referendum this November, giving voters the opportunity to repeal it, and they just might. If it fails, the lost oil and gas revenue would cost Long Beach alone an estimated $20 million a year. As people know, canceling energy would translate into job losses and uncomfortable budget cuts. The ban would place even more upward pressure on pump prices. Due to activist-backed state energy policies, long-suffering California motorists already pay $1.20 more than the national average for each gallon of gasoline. As a core component of the Consumer Price Index, gasoline contributed to February's 0.4% Consumer Price Index increase and to the 3.2% increase in inflation nationwide past 12 months, and I still think it's more than that. New York and California municipal officials reached peak absurdity in recent years by teaming up with trial lawyers who have weaponized lawsuits as a means to impose policies, circumventing the legislative process, and reap obscene multi-billion dollar windfalls. It's called extortion. They launched lawsuits against major energy producers, holding them responsible not just for alleged climate change damages, but for damages they alleged would be likely to occur in the future. Climate lawsuits were tossed out, but the allure of massive damage awards to backfill poor fiscal management decisions has encouraged similar lawsuits. An Oregon county, for example, is demanding that oil producers pony up $50 billion to mitigate the impact of extreme weather that it contends was caused by climate change, for which it holds the oil companies uniquely responsible. To sensible people, this is a naked shakedown. If this and other similar predatory cases were to succeed, energy would become unaffordable and perhaps unavailable, harming virtually every American in every community. In Hawaii, Honolulu officials are hoping to cash in on some jackpot justice from oil companies for producing the same fuel products that they use in their own official city vehicles. Ultimately, questions surrounding greenhouse gases fall under the Federal Clean Air Act. Hawaii's Supreme Court has ruled that the case may proceed. The energy companies named in the case have asked the U.S. Supreme Court to set aside that ruling. If that happens, the Supreme Court is certain to rule these cases unconstitutional, hopefully ridding the nation of this plague of litigation. If the activist class were serious about saving the planet, they would let the free market and good environmental stewardship thrive together in harmony. That's Jason Isaac at Daily Caller News Foundation. Some excellent observations from Jason Isaac. Excellent observations. His mention of future damages is really an excellent one. It points up the absurdity of many personal injury and wrongful death cases, such as Trayvon Martin or George Floyd, who are somehow being projected to earn millions, quote unquote, in the future. In what fucking future, pray tell, was Trayvon Martin or George Floyd going to be earning or worth that kind? It simply amazes me that lawfare and government parasites can see the future, but cannot learn from their own idiotic and sometimes egregious misdeeds of the past. Look, when it comes to nature and our flora and fauna, I'm a conservationist. And no, that is nowhere near the same as an environmentalist, let alone anywhere near as stupid as some of the thought processes that both beget and result from that moronic and twisted form of science. I intentionally air-quoted science there. I believe in taking care of what God gifted us. I believe in respecting and adoring wildlife, plant life, our natural surroundings. I do not believe that sacrificing humanity, whether through economic punishment or outright seizure of resources, is equitable or fair or moral or just. nor do I feel that it's done, for the most part, with honorable or noble intentions. When government officials, usually in or via the EPA, decide to seize 400 acres to protect the seven-footed slug bug, one can pretty much know what comes down the road. Research grants, land grants, building grants, eventually a small number of jobs for a favored few. Think of things like Solyndra. Those are just some of the predictable results. Suffice it to say, when anyone from Bill Gates to Ted Turner to whoever is buying up inordinate amounts of land, we can pretty much guarantee it ain't to build anything that benefits the public. Liberalism is a disease. Environmentalism is but one symptom of that disease. But make no mistake, when anything or anyone from Big Left is on the table when it comes to problem solving, nature is the one area that takes a huge hit. Economically, sure, but more often in the form of restricting or eliminating public access. And let's not forget the misinformation that springs forth, often nothing more than outright lies, by the way, about the survival of this animal or that sensitive piece of land. Suffice to say, quote, good environmental stewardship, unquote, doesn't exist within the free market, especially within the free market. Good conservation can certainly exist within the free market because proper conservation isn't the twisted, idiotic, moronic religion that environmentalism has become. This from the Epic Times regarding the solar eclipse that was took place a couple days ago. Yeah, state emergency was declared in Niagara Falls, Ontario, declared the emergency ahead of the eclipse. The city is in the path of totality, Niagara Falls, Ontario, which will receive no solar rays for a few minutes on April 8th if the moon blocks the sun. Their mayor, Jim Diodati, said in March that he expects the most visitors his city has ever seen in a single day. He told media outlets that up to 1 million people may travel to see the eclipse. Clear weather is the cherry on top, he said. I'm just keeping fingers crossed and hoping. So the municipality of Niagara is proactively invoking a state of emergency to prepare for the event. Because it could involve heavy traffic jams, heavier demands on emergency services, cell phone network overloads. In New York, Governor Kathy Hochul warned travelers in the state to expect high amounts of traffic as a number of eclipse viewing events will be held. She said lane closures and construction will be halted ahead of the astronomical event. Good God, people, it's an eclipse. Seriously, a state of emergency? What's next? How is a natural phenomenon an emergency? Could they not have stayed with the more practical advisory? As in, we advise people to watch where they're going, drive carefully, stay safe. Wendy Patterson is a good follow on Twitter. She basically covered it brilliantly, by the way, as she usually does. She said, if you haven't heard, our government is planning a big event on April 8th. They're warning some states to have enough food for 2 weeks. They're using the eclipse that lasts 4 whole minutes as the excuse for states declaring emergencies. What we need to decide before then, collectively, is if we're going to comply in the event our government plans some sort of attack. I can tell you right now that if Joe Biden ever calls for martial law, that I will not comply. Nails it. Absolutely nails it. Well, this brings me to a list of today's rankings. Hey, the final four is over for both men and women. Lady Hawkeye's lost, and we know Caitlin Clark is the greatest women's college player ever. But we were almost out of stuff to rank, and then it hit me. Apocalypses. We have some damn good attempts at scaring the bejesus out of people with predictions and warnings of impending apocalypses, but damned if not a one of them has come through. So in that vein, I bring you the 5 worst apocalypses of all time. Number 5, anything predicted by Gene Dixon. supposedly she sort of hit on the JFK assassination. She made some nebulous comment way back then, someone of note will die this year. Some headline like that. But seriously, this lady has predicted doom and gloom for decades, but we're all still here. Number four, that stupid guy in the early 1970s, I think it was 1973, who said a mysterious glut of oil would be poured over the earth some Friday and the planet would burn to a cinder. That was a fail. Number three, Monday's eclipse. Okay, it's a tie with all the other eclipses that were supposed to bring mass chaos, including machines going wacko, a la Stephen King's Maximum Overdrive, and of course, the hit of that movie, soda machines shooting cans like cannons at 12-year-olds and punching can-sized holes in their heads. Number two, worst eclipse or apocalypse ever. 12-12-12. 12-12-2012. Remember the Mayans? Their end of the world prediction? Let's give the Mayans a break here. They were calling for this like thousands of years ago. No internet, no TV, no sports, no comics, no Ann Landers in the newspapers. No real famous people around to predict their deaths. So yes, it was a crappy apocalypse. But don't blame it all on the Mayans. I mean, the National Enquirer's got to shoulder some of that blame. And number one, the worst ever apocalypse, Y2K. Never mind that banks and finance companies who are doing pro forma mortgage and bond statements in 1968, 1969, they knew about the issue. But they failed to note it until about 1996. Never mind that utilities were never going to cease working. Never mind that telecom infrastructure had zero chance of failing. Why? Because bankers already knew it wouldn't be a problem. Utilities and the telecom companies, they were spending all their cash, and they have a crap ton of cash, always, on upgrades and improvements. What do regulated telecoms and utilities love doing just about more than anything? One, spending it on upgrades, of course, and then getting permission to bill the ratepayers after the fact. But what they love most about that, not actually implementing any of this stuff until they absolutely have to. They don't implement the upgrades and the improvements until enough people have complained about the need for improvements and upgrades years down the road. Simple as that. Hey, I'm going to take a quick break. I will be right back, but I'm going to take a quick break and I'm going to play a little bit of stuff from the French Connection. Be right back, folks. We'll be right back. And we are back. That is titled Subway from the movie The French Connection. The brilliant trumpeter and arranger, Don Ellis, composer as well. It's during the subway chase scene, but they actually play it earlier in the movie as well. So anyway, so let's get back to our items. Wisconsin voters voted to kill Zuckerbucks. Basically, what that means is that they voted to approve constitutional amendment, actually two, to tighten the election integrity in that state. The first would ban private funding of elections. The second would restrict election administration to, quote, only election officials designated by law. Private funding of elections has attracted considerable scrutiny since 2020, when Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook gave all kinds of money to certain places for quote-unquote election administration. Second one basically says only people designated by law. In other words, I can't become a election official or a poll watcher on a whim and part of the election process. Things like recounts, calling for a recount. Only people designated by law can do that. No more of this volunteer stepping forward to call these things. So that's a good thing. Meanwhile, over at University of South Florida in Tampa, there's a hunger strike going on. Yep, a hunger strike. So the university's not budging, but they're 2 days into a, God, now probably more. This is last week, and I remember I couldn't go last week. So they're in this hunger strike. They're demanding the university divest from companies they believe are enabling the Israel-Hamas conflict. Despite an order from the university's president, calls on them to cease and desist. Originally, 18 people were participating in, as of last week, only five. They've been starving themselves for a couple of weeks. Their demands have gone completely unheard, and if they truly wanted us to stop hunger striking, which of course we want to do, they would concede to our demands. By the way, Al made a good point the other day about Ramadan. You know, they talk about Ramadan and all this sacrifice. All it means is you skip lunch. You don't eat during sunlight hours. The sun goes down until the sun comes up, you eat all you want. So the student-led group, Students for Socialism, demanding USF call for a ceasefire in Gaza and divest from companies they said are supporting Israel. They also want the university to publicize its investment portfolio. So we really do not want to see more empathy from USF that they care about their students. That they care that there are students who have lost their loved ones in Gaza, that they care that there are students who are hunger striking and putting their bodies on the line. Are you kidding me? Something in that I said I would. Yeah, so they say it means a lot to the whole community. Now, one guy, Will Mia Bleshko, had to seek medical attention. He says, it means a whole lot to the community. Really? He says, millions of people are suffering much more than me in Gaza right now. Yeah, sure. Remember, the board said, we do not select individual stocks for companies or investment. Instead, the university contracts with fund managers to invest in a variety of asset classes, which include companies in most major industries. As a member of the board. All I can say, Brother Tommy, if you get by there, please pick up a couple of boxes of popsicles on me. Take them over to these nitwits. On the Second Amendment front, you know, it's sad that I have to still talk about the Second Amendment. That used to be a given that we shouldn't even be talking about that. By the way, there was supposedly a mass shooting at the end of Ramadan in Philadelphia. National Shooting Sports Foundation applauds Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb and Utah Governor Spencer Cox for signing a supported Second Amendment Privacy Act. in their respective states. The laws will bar the use of a firearm retailer-specific merchant category code for banks, credit card companies, and or financial service providers to track the lawful sale of firearms and ammunition. Laws are designed to protect the privacy of lawful and private firearm and ammunition purchases from being abused for political purposes by corporate financial service providers and unlawful government search and seizure of legal and private financial transactions. Lawrence Keene, Senior Vice President and General Counsel at National Shooting Sports Foundation, said this, "Corporate banks and the federal government have already proven they will run roughshod over Second Amendment and privacy rights. The need to safeguard private and legal purchases of firearms and ammunition by law-abiding citizens has never been greater." Foundation thanks both Governor Holcomb and Governor Cox for their leadership in signing these laws that will protect the rights of the citizens in their states. No American should fear being placed on a government watch list simply for exercising their constitutionally protected rights to keep and bear arms. So the U.S. Treasury's Financial Crimes Enforcement Network admitted to South Carolina Senator Tim Scott in a letter that it violated the Fourth Amendment rights of law-abiding citizens that protect against illegal search and seizure when it collected the credit card purchase history from banks and credit card companies of individuals who purchased firearms and ammunition in the days surrounding January 6, 2020. The department had no cause, sought the information without a warrant to place law-abiding citizens on a government watch list only because they exercised their Second Amendment rights to lawfully purchase firearms and ammunition. The idea of a firearm-specific firearm retailer-specific MCC was born from anti-gum New York Times columnist Andrew Ross Sorkin, an Amalgamated Bank, which has been called the left's private banker, and bankrolls DNC and several anti-gun politicians. Amalgamated Bank lobbied the Swiss-based International Organization for Standardization, ISO, for the creation of that code. NSSF has called on Congress to investigate Amalgamated Bank's role in manipulating the International Standards Organization's standard-setting process. Sorkin admitted creating it would be a first step to creating a national firearm registry, which is forbidden by federal law. Wow. I mean, why are we having to talk about this still? It sucks. Remember how President Trump had his bond lowered? Guess what? Litigious James wants to investigate the bond company. Seriously, you can't make this stuff up, I swear. Litigious James a judge was going to hold a hearing over the bond, and State Attorney General was asking for more details about the bond. Days after he posted it, after President Trump posted the bond, which blocked New York State from imminently collecting on a severely flawed civil fraud judgment, lawyers called for more information on the bond's bona fides. Litigious James' office filed papers giving Trump's lawyers or the bond underwriter 10 days to, quote, justify the bond. Essentially, that shows that the company can make good on it. That could mean disclosing more about the collateral Trump provided. One of President Trump's attorneys responded that James was trying to provoke a baseless public quarrel in a desperate effort to gain relevance after an appeals court significantly cut the amount of appeals bond needed to hold off collection. Is it not? I mean, do we ask questions about anyone else's bond? I mean, James's office filed notice that it takes exception to the sufficiency of the bond. It's either posted or it's not. And they accept it or they don't. Why is litigious James now questioning the legitimacy of the bond? Pretty simple. They post it or they don't. Nothing more, nothing less. Now, I'll say this about RFK Jr. He ain't overtly in the tank for La Dope Nostra, apparently. American Journal Daily had this. They say he used to have an amicable relationship with Dopey, but supposedly he started using his power against him, Dopey did, right away. He's revealing that Dopey Joe is the one who is the biggest threat to freedom, not Donald Trump. Said during an interview, he believes President Joe Biden is a greater threat to democracy than former President Trump. He is the first president in history that has used the federal agencies to censor political speech. 37 hours after he took the oath of office, he was censoring me. The greatest threat to democracy is not somebody who questions election returns, but a president of the United States who uses the power of his office to force social media companies, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, et al., to open a portal and give access to that portal to the FBI, the CIA, the IRS, CISA, and NIH to censor his political critics. RFK won a federal case that showed Dopey began censoring him. Kennedy's been critical of government-mandated vaccines and that Biden likely colluded with social media companies to censor him. And there's this one. This next one's just from the Epoch Times. So the Biden administration has installed a new rule making it harder to fire bureaucrats. And what they're hoping to do is block a statement from President Trump saying he would fire rogue bureaucrats and radically reshape the federal workforce. The new rule bolsters job protections for career civil servants. It's issued out April 4th, last Thursday, by the U.S. Office of Personnel Management that basically said, it hinted that it's targeting a promised move by a potential second Trump presidency to quote-unquote drain the swamp and root out the deep state by making it easier to fire government workers. In the first week of the Biden-Harris administration, President Biden revoked an executive order issued by the previous administration that risked altering our country's longstanding merit-based civil service system. What? So, yeah, they created a thing called Schedule F to remove people into that status. President Trump has called on Congress to pass laws that would give the commander-in-chief the authority to fire any government employee basically at will. Absolutely. Too many in government already. Thanks for nothing, Lloyd Austin. Lloyd Austin, this is from Town Hall. Lloyd Austin testified the other day before the Senate Armed Services Committee. He basically said there is no genocide happening in Gaza, in Hamas, wherever you want to call it, the Gaza area. So there's no genocide. Pro-Hamas supporters have been whining about. Funny, he also didn't call the October 7th attacks a genocide. He did stress that aid to the Palestinian civilian population, what the hell is a Palestinian, which is also Hamas, is essentially stabilizing the region. So they're going to establish a pier in Gaza to deliver humanitarian aid by sea, running by late this month. Does he not realize that this is basically just a collections point for Hamas? Tim Kaine, Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia, said the Israeli government is collectively punishing Gazans by throttling access to water and humanitarian aid. Turns out that work, whatever that's called, the World Central Kitchen, that they were traveling in a convoy with Hamas rebels. God. Meanwhile, The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, is not endorsing President Biden. He said he said he regrets endorsing him in 2020. Shared his own views on cancel culture. Says, am I happy with the state of America right now? Well, that answer is no. Do I believe we're going to get better? I believe that. I'm an optimistic guy, and I believe we can get better. Says he now regrets the decision to support Dopey Joe and Harris. But he also said he won't be making any political endorsements anytime soon. He says, I thought it was the best decision for me at the time. So there's the key. So he's not going to support either candidate. His goal is to bring our country together. It's going to be no endorsement. How's that bringing the country together? He says, I realize this level of influence, I'm going to keep my politics to myself. It's between me and the ballot box. What changed between now and 2020? James Woods had an awesome post on X, formerly known as Twitter, in response to South Carolina coach Dawn Staley's point about transgender men, fake women playing in women's sports. So basically, she has said she tried to say she didn't, you know, just play sports, but she's basically saying she supports men playing against women. James Woods said this, we are fortunate to see what will probably be one of the last women's championships played by actual women. One response, everything women have fought for is being taken away by men in skirts. Another says, women are going to have to take a hard stance if they want to keep the sports they fought so hard to keep. Why not have the NBA champs play the WNBA champs one time? To give everyone a clear view of the physical differences. That's an excellent idea, by the way. Excellent, excellent idea. Okay, Alaskan is in the queue. Boyd, I'm going to bring him in.
Hey, Grandpa, how you doing today?
Good, Boyd. How you doing, sir?
Oh, not too bad. Hey, I've got a few comments on a couple of the stories you read, but because of time, I'm only going to refer to one. Okay. And that is what you told Brother Tommy about.
Yeah.
The popsicles.
Yeah,
you know, over to their hunger strikers. And I'm going to say no to Brother Tommy doing that. Under no condition should Tommy go over there with a bag of popsicles for those suckers. What he needs to do is to bring over his barbecue grill and a stack of ribs and a good bunch of sauce, potato salads, pork and beans, and everything else, and have a barbecue next to him, weather permitting, that the wind will take the smoke and the smell right across their place where they're holding their strike.
I'm afraid of one thing on that, Boyd. I don't think these people actually eat anything worthwhile. I don't know that they eat that stuff. You know, they already.
Well, it's,
you know,
it's not for them. Damn it!
No,
it's for
true.
Everybody else. Have a big barbecue party for everybody else around there and let all that smoke and stuff just drift over by them little hunger strikers.
Don't let them have any.
Yeah.
Don't let them have any.
That's just right.
Sorry, guys. You're out of luck on this one. No
yeah,
barbecue
you're on a
for
hunger
you guys.
Strike.
Yeah,
yeah you're on a hunger strike. So, you know, go back downwind.
Yeah, we couldn't possibly interfere with your hunger strike.
I just think you have to
humiliate them a little bit. I know that sounds terrible to say that, but it's what it calls for. You know, why are we dignifying this kind of stuff years later with this crap of, you know, we've got to take care. Nobody
yeah.
says they, you know, I mean. I don't know. I think Al said it best. This is not really you know, Ramadan. It's just such a false thing. As he says, this is all Ramadan really is skipping lunch. That's it. That's it. You know, it's not a real thing. I hate to say it like that, but it's fact. I mean, it's just fact. They don't actually give up anything at all.
No.
They skip lunch for a couple of weeks. That's all they do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I hate to make fun of someone's religion and all that. I get it. You know, don't do that, Hank. But fact remains, they're not really, I mean, I don't know. I hate to be but.
They're just on a diet getting ready for summer beach time.
Yeah, exactly. And terrace season. You know, they gotta be rested up for terrace season. I mean, that's what it boils down to. I just, you know, I'm tired of, you know, of the coddling. You know, first of all, does anyone care? I mean, I know that I sure don't.
No.
You know, if they go hungry, fine. You know, I mean, you remember back, I remember back in the, you know, when did Bobby Sands go on his, you know, the IRA guy, he went on a hunger strike at one point, and it was, after a while, it became, you know, it was comical, you know? I mean, is it even a real thing, you know, these quote-unquote hunger strikes? I mean, because then you find out, well, no, he was drinking water during this time, or they were doing that, or, you know, I mean, there's all these little cheat codes out of it. They're not actually striking. Mm-hmm. We're just sort of striking. I mean, it's like, really? Okay, well, then actually strike and you might impress me, but until then, just shut up. I don't care about your hunger strike.
Until your rib cage starts to show and the bones in your arms start to show, you're just faking it.
Yeah, exactly. They're not really striking. They're just grandstanding, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
They're grandstanding is what they're doing. And,
you
know, as long as people put up with it, as long as people give it credence, it will continue to go on. We'll continue to have this stupid giving them, why do we give, that's what it boils down to. Why are we giving them a voice? Why are we letting them dictate to us? I mean, it's just, I don't know.
As far as I'm concerned, until they go, you know, 6 months without eating.
Yeah.
It's just grandstanding. They don't mean shit.
Yeah.
You know.
If they did, if they actually meant it, well, like I said, you know what? Turn down this plate of ribs, and then we'll see how serious you actually are. You know, until you turn down that plate of ribs, nah, your thing's falling on deaf ears with me. I'm not going to give it any credence.
Well, I don't think I'd allow them to turn down a plate of ribs myself. Because,
well, I mean,
you know, I would say no, you can't have them. You're on a hunger strike. Remember?
Yeah.
Remember?
Exactly. Yeah, you're striking here. So why are you suddenly reaching for those ribs? You don't.
Yeah. I'm not going to be a scab in this strike. You can't have none.
That's perfectly stated. I mean, yeah. You ever notice that though? Anytime they say that, like those hunger strikes, there's always like, you find out there's some little codicil. Well, we were giving him intravenous stuff. You know, you hear about that where there's hunger striking, but they're taking intravenous fluids. Well, pardon me, but that's not a hunger strike. Well, no, we're not foregoing nutrition. Well, then that's not a hunger strike. Oh, well, what it means is I'm not actually eating my favorite foods. I'm only eating stuff that I don't. Well, that's not a hunger strike. So, you know, again, though, we give them credence. The media gives them credence. The media says, oh, it's just this noble thing. So until
Yeah, and if they were really, really true to their cause, they wouldn't eat the pork ribs anyway. They wouldn't be allowed to because of their religion, you know. Say, okay, here we go. Well, I mean, we're eating pork, and, you know, we know you guys don't eat pork. So
that's the other thing. Yeah, you got to serve up a big plate of something that they don't eat just to see how much how true their convictions really are, which,
yeah,
as you and I know, aren't usually all that serious. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And then go out there the next morning and do some bacon and eggs for breakfast for everybody on campus.
Yeah, absolutely.
Except them.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. And see how they like it. See how serious they are. So in the meantime, hey,
yeah,
we're up against the hard end of the show.
I
didn't get to everything I wanted to, but I got to most of it. And I want to thank folks for bearing with me after last week. I want to thank Sue from New Mexico and Boyd for their calls, Brother Tommy and Rick, of course, and Boyd and Duck, Snowman James, and Vito for being in the chat room. I know Shabaka Black Panther or whatever he's called was in for a bit, but I already know what those calls would be about, so I just simply don't take those. So in the meantime, folks, have a great week, rest of your week, have a great weekend, and we will be back next week, God willing, and Blog Talk Radio working as well. Have a good one, folks.
And my condolences to Frankie.
Thank you. We'll talk to you later, Boyd.
Bye.